stopped at Lottie's clinic before going to her apartment to see if she thought Jill needed anything for shock. Lottie's nurse, a young Puerto Rican woman, saw me. "Hello, Vic," she said. "Hi, Carol. Tell Lottie that I'd like to bring my young friend back to her apartment and ask her if she can take a quick look at her. She's had a lot of stress lately." When I took Jill into Lottie's office, Lottie looked at her pupils and made her do some simple tests.
"What was the trouble?"
she asked. "Her father was shot," I explained. Lottie shook her head.
"Vic, when you get her home, a little brandy. Then let her get some rest. Are you going out today?"
"Yes, I've got a lot to do." She thought a minute.
"I'll send Carol over in about an hour. She can stay with Jill until one of us gets home."
"Great. I'll wait until she gets there." When Jill and I got to the apartment, I checked the street and the entrance. The coast was clear. Maybe Earl really did believe he'd scared me off. I told Jill to take a hot bath. I was going to prepare some breakfast, and then she was to sleep. I helped her unpack in the room I'd been sleeping in. I could sleep on the daybed in the living room. When Jill emerged, pink and sleepy, from the bath, I set her to eating breakfast. Then I said, "Now I want you to tell me whom your father talked to in the last few days. We'll sit on the bed, and you'll drink some hot milk with brandy, so that when I'm done, you'll go to sleep." She got into bed, obediently sipping the milk, and we went through a list of people, which included Yardley Masters. Jill said, "Daddy kept raving that he was sure that Anita's father, Mr. McGraw, had killed Peter, and Mr. Masters said, 'Look, John, you don't want to keep going around saying things like that. A lot of things could come out that you don't want to hear.' Then Daddy started yelling, 'Are you threatening me?' And Mr. Masters said, 'No, of course not, John. We're friends, just giving you some advice.'" "I see," I said. "Was that all? Did anything happen yesterday?"
"Well, Daddy got into a fight with someone on the phone. He said, 'I won't be a party to it.' That's all I heard. I went outside. Susan was after me to sit in the living room entertaining all these gruesome people who came after Peter's funeral, so I just went down to the beach."
"Good for you. Now try to put it out of your mind. Finish your milk while I brush your hair, and then sleep." Between the hair brushing and the brandy, she relaxed and lay down.
"Stay with me," she said drowsily.
So I sat down on the bed, holding her hand. Something about her made me long for the child I'd never had, and I watched until she was in a deep sleep. While I waited for Carol to arrive, I made some phone calls, first to Ralph.
"How's it going, Sherlock?" he asked breezily. "How about dinner tonight?"
"Okay," I assured him. "But first, I'd just like you to find out if your boss, Yardley Masters, has had any calls from a guy named Andrew McGraw."
"Are you still flogging that dead horse?"
"I haven't written anyone off, Ralph, even you."
"But the police made an arrest for Peter Thayer's murder. I wish you could believe the police know as much about catching murderers as you do."
I laughed.
"You're not the only one. By the way, did you know Peter Thayer's father was killed this morning?"
"What? How did that happen?"
"He was shot. Too bad Donald McKenzie is already in jail for supposedly killing Peter. Still, there must be someone else they can blame for this one."
All right," Ralph said.
"You've made your point. I'll ask Yardley's secretary if there have been any calls from Andrew McGraw."
"Thanks, Ralph. See you tonight." Carol arrived as I was looking up a number in the directory. "Jill's asleep," I told her.
"Good," she answered. "I've brought all the old medical records over to get them updated. This is a good opportunity."
I went back to the phone and called Murray Ryerson, crime reporter for the Herald Star.
"Oh, hi," he said. "Got any good stories for me today?"
"Not today. I need a couple of pictures."
"Whose?"
"If I tell you, will you promise not to put two and two together until I have some evidence?"
"Maybe."
I need pictures of Andrew McGraw of the Knife Grinders Union and a guy named Yardley Masters. He's a vice president over at Ajax Insurance.
You tying McGraw to Ajax?
Stop slobbering, Murray. Ajax doesn't do business with the Knife Grinders. If a story breaks, you can have it.
Tell you what, I'll meet you at Fiorella's in an hour with the pictures and try to pick your brains over a beer.
Great, Murray, thanks. An hour would give me time to stop and register the Smith & Wesson. On my way out, I called to Carol. Tell Lottie I'll be back around 6, but I'll be eating out. The bureaucrats at City Hall took longer registering the gun than I expected. I was running late, but I decided to stop at my lawyer's office to drop off a Xerox of the Ajax claim draft I'd found in Peter Thayer's apartment. I also left written instructions to give the draft to Murray should anything happen to me in the next few days. By the time I got to Fiorella's, Murray was finishing his second beer.
Got your picks for you.
He tossed a folder over to me.
We got a lot of choice on McGraw, but I only dug up one for Masters, receiving some civic award out in Winnetka. I got you a couple of copies.
Thanks, I said, opening the folder. The best of McGraw was a close-up, taken apparently without his knowledge. His face was relaxed, but concentrating.
This is great. Where was it taken?
Murray smiled.
Senate hearings on racketeering in the unions. Now, V.I. Warshofsky, most beautiful detective in Chicago, he said, leaning toward me, what gives with these pictures? I recall seeing that young Peter Thayer worked for Ajax Insurance, in fact, for Mr. Masters. Also, I recall reading that his girlfriend, the lovely Anita McGraw, was the daughter of well-known union leader Andrew McGraw. Do you have a client?
Yes, I do.
But you won't tell me who it is.
I smiled agreement.
Do you buy Mackenzie as Thayer Jr.'s murderer and robbery as the motive?
Murray asked.
I don't know. I haven't talked to the man, I said. But one does wonder who killed Thayer Sr. if Mackenzie killed the son. What about you?
He gave a big smile.
I talked to Lieutenant Mallory after the case first broke, and he didn't say anything about robbery then. You found the body, didn't you? Did the apartment look ransacked?
I couldn't really tell. I didn't know what was supposed to be there.
By the way, he asked casually, what took you down there in the first place?
Nostalgia, Murray. I used to go to school there, and I got an itch to see what the old place looked like.
Murray laughed. Okay, Vic, you win. Can't fault me for trying, though, can you?
There is one thing, Murray. He looked at me intently. I have what I think is a clue. I've left a copy of it with my attorney. If I should be bumped off, he has instructions to give it to you.
What is it?
Murray asked.
You ought to be a detective, Murray, I said.
One thing I will say, Earl Smyson's hovering around this case. He gave me this black eye, which you've been too gentlemanly to mention. It wouldn't be out of the question for my body to come floating down the Chicago River. You might look out of your office window every hour or so to see. Murray didn't look surprised.
You know who arrested Donald Mackenzie for Peter Thayer's murder?
Yes, Frank Carlson.
And whose boy is Carlson?
Henry Vespucci's, I said.
And who's been covering Vespucci's back all these years?
Commissioner Tim Sullivan, I guessed.
The lady wins a Cupid doll, Murray said. Since you know that much, I'll tell you who Commissioner Tim Sullivan spent Christmas in Florida with last year. Earl Smyson himself. If you're playing with that crowd, you'd better be very, very careful.
I got up and stuck the photographs in my shoulder bag. Thanks, Murray. You're not the first one to tell me so. I'll let you know if anything turns up. So long, Murray. I had a plan that was really a stab in the dark. I was assuming that McGraw and Masters had worked together on an insurance fraud. If so, they met from time to time. And why not in a bar? I didn't have the resources to comb the whole city, so I just have to hope that they did so near where they worked. The bars in that area would keep me busy enough for some time. A couple of places recognized McGraw vaguely. One bar knew Masters by sight as one of the men from Ajax. Some places were hostile, some indifferent, but none of them had seen my pair together. After my fifth bar, I was feeling bloated, sweaty, and depressed. I'd agreed to meet Ralph at 8. I decided to go home first. In Lottie's living room, I found Jill playing with two little dark-haired children. She looked up at me and smiled.
"Hi," she said. "These are Carol's nieces. She was supposed to babysit them tonight, but Lottie talked her into bringing them over here and making enchiladas. Yum, yum."
Lottie called out from the kitchen, and I went to say hi. She looked at me.
"The detective work wasn't so agreeable this afternoon, eh?"
"No, I learned nothing and had to drink too much beer doing so. I just hope I don't get sick at dinner. My date is getting fed up with me as it is. Jill looks a lot better, don't you think?"
"Oh, yes. The sleep did her good. I talked to her when I came in. She doesn't complain, but it's obvious the mother has no emotions to spare for her. As for the sister..."
Lottie made an expressive gesture. "Yeah, I agree. We can't keep her here forever, though. Besides, what can she do during the day?"
"Well, Carol and I had an idea, watching her with Rosa and Tracy. Babies are good when you're depressed. Something to cuddle. What would you think of her coming to the clinic and minding children there? They're always tumbling around the place."
"Ask her," I said. "I'm sure the best thing for her right now would be to have something to do." In the living room, Lottie and I stood watching Jill playing with the little girls. Lottie said,
"You're very good with these little ones, Jill. While you are here, you could be of great help to me at the clinic."
Lottie outlined her idea. Jill's face lit up.
"But you know," she said seriously, "I might not know what to do if they all started to cry or something."
"Well," Lottie said, "I will provide you a little assistance by way of a drawerful of lollipops. Bad for the teeth, perhaps, but great for tears."
After a shower, I went into the bedroom to change for dinner. I thought I might just lie down for a minute to recover my equilibrium. The next thing I knew was Lottie shaking me awake.
"It's 7:30, Vic. Don't you have to be going?"
"Oh, hell," I exclaimed. "Thanks, Lottie." I swung out of bed and hurriedly put on a bright orange sundress, stuck the Smith & Wesson in my handbag, grabbed a sweater, and ran out the door, calling goodbye to Jill as I went. Poor Ralph, I thought, keeping him waiting in restaurants so that I can pick his brains about Ajax.